Well, over the past few weeks, we've had a chat with a number of current participants in the Tasmanian harness racing industry, but on today's podcast, we're going back to have a chat with one of the all-time greats. He was part of one Australian Derby victory, three Tasmanian championships, an Inter-Dominion Heat, 14 sire stakes, three Tasmanian Derbies, three Easter Cups, a Devonport Cup, seven Tasmanian Drivers' Premierships, three Trainers' Premierships. He's one of only three drivers in this state to record a century of wins in a season, and he was one of the inaugural inductees into the Tasmanian Harness Racing Hall of Fame. It's a very good resume as we welcome to the podcast Neville Webley. How are you going, Neville?
Good, thanks, Duncan. How are you doing, all right?
I'm very well, keeping safe during COVID-19, that's for sure. Neville, many people listening to this wouldn't have heard from you since middle of 2009. It's the last time we've seen you on a racetrack. So what is Neville Webley up to these days?
Keeping out of the racing industry, basically. I've still got a farm and that sort of thing. I've got and I work up here on the farm. I do work for Elgas. I used to work for Clean Heat when I got out of the harness racing industry, but now I work for Elgas, which bought out Clean Heat. So, yeah, I'm virtually in the gas industry. And also still got my farm and whatnot. So, yeah, I've been keeping very busy, actually.
Right, now let's go all the way back to the start of your career in harness racing in the early days. How did you get involved in the industry?
When I was a young boy on the farm, we used to break in ponies and stuff like that, and my dad was always very interested in racing. We always went to the races of the weekend and that sort of thing. I'm talking back in the late 60s, early 70s sort of situation. So I've always been very, very interested in that sort of thing and always had a lot to do with horses and stuff like that. And it was probably a natural progression back then that because I had to do with ponies and stuff like that, that I sort of rolled over and started in the harness racing industry. As I said, like my dad was very interested. He's always go to the races. I think he had a horse back in the late 50s, early 60s sort of thing. It was okay. And he was always interested, like a lot of other country people back in the day were interested in horses. You know, nearly all the old farmers always had either a thoroughbred or a pacer around the place, and they always sort of had a horse or two or had some interest in one. It was just sort of a natural thing for country people to be interested in racing, you know.
Yeah. So I think you had your first race drive in 1978. What were the memories of that, and who were some of the participants that helped you in those early years?
Tommy Jackson was probably, because he was good friends with Dad, he sort of got me involved in it a little bit, like he showed me how to gear horse up and do all that sort of thing. So thanks to Tom for that. A nice enough bloke and all that sort of thing. What could I say? We sort of rolled off from there, just had one or two horses and played around with them. Dad and Tommy bought a couple of horse at the yearling sales. One was Battler. He won about 10 or 12 races. And the other one was a horse called Rebel Command, and he also won 8 or 10 races too, so they sort of did quite well. That was at the yearling sales back at the old Elfin Showground a few years ago. I ended up by looking after and training Battler, and Tommy sort of took over and looked after Rebel Command. So both horses were quite successful, so basically that was where I started off, you know.
Battler was your first win as a trainer and driver. What do you remember of that?
He's a nice little horse. I do remember that. It's a long time ago, about 78, like you said. And that wasn't yesterday, unfortunately. he was a nice little horse. Back in the days, a little bit rough gated early and that sort of thing, but that was just par for the course back then. Like, horses were a little different than what they are now. They weren't so naturally gated as what they are now, or in latter years, I suppose you could say. But, yeah, a good, very good learning process, obviously. I think what anyone in the industry will tell you, that every year they learn more and more all the time, and I'm certainly in that sphere. Like, from day one to now, you know so much more and have learned so much, and it's just you never stop learning, really. And like, tomorrow you're going to be a better trainer than what you are today, if you know what I mean. Yeah,
yeah. Your first three seasons you drove a total of 13 winners, but the first of many feature race wins for you came in 1981. Sunshine Jim took out the Easter Cup. I think Kevin Denny trained the horse.
Yeah, very good horse. Yeah, I was very lucky. I was only a young bloke back then, and Kevin had Sunshine Jimmy, who was a grand animal. He was probably one of my favourite horses, really. He was a big black horse, a real nice gated type horse. everything else in harness racing, I suppose, or any industry, you may well be, and there's probably lots of trainers or drivers throughout Australia or even jockeys that work in the country and do very well at what they do. You have to be noticed to get a job in town or so to speak, and get, say, with the better trainers or whatnot, or you have to come across a horse who can showcase your talents. Well, I was lucky that Kevin gave me the opportunity to drive St. John's Inn when he was quite a young horse, sort of going for his grades, and luckily I was able to drive him, so it probably showed off my talent a little bit, without sounding like an arrogant prick. It sort of showed off my talents a little bit, so therefore it sort of leapfrogged me from just being another guy who could drive a horse or two to think, shit, this boy can drive a bit, you know? And hence that horse was very good. And he did that for me. I don't think I gave him a sore back either, but mind you, he did jump me around pretty well. So that's nuts. It's like a hand in a glove type situation.
Yeah. So by this stage, you're certainly on the map as one of the state's premier reinsmen. Your first of three Tasmanian Pacing Championship wins occurred in 1983 with Lobelant. I think he was a Victorian trained horse.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I was driving a couple of horses through this series, and a bloke called John McDermott was driving him, and the couple of horses I was driving through the series didn't qualify for the final. Well, they weren't all that good, I don't think, at the time. A few little things went wrong, and John McDermott couldn't come over and drive the horse in the final, Lobelant, and a bloke called Laurie Manley part-owned him and trained him, and he rang me up and said, can you come down and have a drive on this horse? And I'm thinking, shit, here we go. And I was only a kid back then, and I thought, shit, here we go. So I went down and had to drive him on the Tuesday, I think, on his track record. And he said, would you like to drive him on the weekend? I said, I'd love to. He said, Henry can't come over and drive the horse. And Henry McDermott at the time was probably one of the higher grade reinsmen in Victoria and very good at his trade. And thought, well, it was a real feather in my cap to even be given the opportunity to drive that horse. And he was a very good horse. He probably wasn't a Group 1 horse or a Grand Circuit horse, if you use that term, in latter years. He was a very, very good horse. He was just, he could have raced in those Group 1 races Grand races, but he probably wouldn't have won one. But just a bit below that, he was a really, really outstanding and very good horse. I was lucky enough to win the race on him, you know.
Yeah, your second championship win came 12 months later with Paleface Lindy.
Surprisingly enough, I think Lobelant beat Paleface Lindy that first year. I think Paleface Lindy may have won the race the year before. Then Lobelant beat Paleface Lindy the next year, I think, if that's the way it goes. And then the year after, the Georges had them back here because Demler initially had him in Melbourne, and I suppose he was basically on his mark over there. And he came back here, and I was lucky enough. I drove a couple of horses through this series that year, Mr. Dawson and Paleface Lindy, and I had the pick of the two of them sort of thing. And I picked Paleface Lindy, who was a very, very good horse. So he was lucky enough to get up and beat, I think, Vicky Neptune on the day. But he was a really, really good horse. Back in his day, like he's like Lobelant, he was an outstanding horse. Probably a shade short of what he was a couple of years earlier, but he was still a grand animal, you know, and he did well on the day, you know. So, yeah, I was very lucky back then, actually.
Yeah, and your third win in the race was in 1992, where you trained the Cornella. You drove Thomas Magnum, who defeated On Parade. I just had a look at the replay of the race before recording this. It was a tough effort by Thomas Magnum. He was three wide for nearly 1,200 metres.
Yeah, very good horse. He was just a dour, big, long, striding, staying type horse. Actually, he'd won about 10 or 12 in a row just prior to that race. And actually, in that race, they beat Thorwright, who was, I think, the current Inter-Dominion champion at the time. Thorwright didn't quite run up to expectations, I suppose you could say. But, yeah, no, both those two horses were going very, very well. Thomas Magnum was a real culty stallion-type horse. And actually, he never won a race after that. He went to Melbourne for the Inter-Dominion, and a couple of things went against him, and he got throat problems. That was the end of him. But very good horse, and that was an absolutely outstanding and grand win. There was a lot of good horses in that race, and he did very, very well. He was a really, really nice horse, yeah.
Yeah. You've had a lot of success in many feature races. Let's talk about a filly who won the Tasmanian and Victorian Oaks in 1990, Lady Alora. She's had an impressive record.
Lady Laura, yep, nice horse too. She's wild as they come. She's kicking carry on. She was a real bastard horse to train. Kenny Austin drove in when she won the Oaks down here. I was on the mainland with, I think, with Hallie. I might have been in West Australia with Hallie at the time. She's a mother of a horse to train, but had loads of ability, very rough-gaited, big, raw-type animal, as were a lot of the horses back then, and as were a lot of the Qatari Knights back then, because she was by Qatari Knight. Really, really nice horse, very tough and very dour. Probably didn't possess huge volumes of speed, but she was very, very strong. You know, she was one of those big, raw-boned, tough horses, and, yeah, was a very nice horse, yeah, really.
Yeah. Well, you touched on Hallie. Let's talk about him. A very good youngster at two. He won the Sire Stakes race. In 1990, that was the year things really took off. We'll touch on a few of his wins first of all. He's won the Derby in the Showgrounds. That was probably his first feature win as a three-year-old.
Yeah, no, Hallie was the best horse ever trained. Had a huge amount of potential, huge raw ability. He's probably the hardest horse ever trained, probably one of the hardest horses I've ever driven, because he used to, even at the finish of his career, he's like driving a two-year-old going around. He wouldn't race inside horses, and he'd hang, and he'd do lots and lots of little things wrong, just like you'd expect a green two-year-old or a green three-year-old to do. He was plagued with injury throughout his career. Had not major things, but little niggling injuries all the time. The major thing he had, he cracked a hoof in the championship down here when he ran second to Thorwaite, I think, or third to Thorwaite, whatever he did. It might have been, was one of the two. Anyway, he ran a couple of thirds down here, but he drew poorly both times, and he cracked his hoof out when he's a four-year-old in that, had 12 months off. He was one of those horses that really needed 12 months of continual racing against Grand Circuit horses just to harden him up, make him aware of what racing was all about, just so the penny drop a little bit so he became a more tractable racehorse. But he never got that. He'd have three or four runs, five runs, and then something would go wrong all the time. He just was just plagued by bad luck and niggling injuries all the time, but possessed huge amounts of ability. And I'm sure had 12 months of Grand Circuit racing under his belt, like a continual season where nothing went wrong, he would have come out the other side a far, far better horse. Not that it would give him any more ability, because he had all the ability under the sun. It just would have made him a nicer and better racehorse, because he sort of never actually went to the races at any given time where he's 100% fit and sound and all the rest of it. He's always had a few little things go against him and gone wrong, and we're sort of always patching him up and trying to get him there under duress, if you know what I mean. But on raw ability, he was a mile of his horse ever trained.
Yeah. Should have he won the New South Wales Derby? I think you copped a bit of a suspension from the stewards in that run.
No, I didn't get suspended over that. He was having trouble with his feet, and we didn't realise anyway. I drove him out hard up the straight. He's had a real knack of getting the front and pulling up, and it was a real wet day and all that sort of thing. And I suppose a lot of people were sorry to drive him out of his gear, but I drove him like that all the time anyway. Just that one night, he got out of his gear and galloped, and a horse called Imprimata got up and beat him. Yeah, probably my fault in some ways, I suppose you could say, but really wasn't my fault. Probably wasn't. I drove him well up until the fact that I may have driven him out of his gear, but I drove him like that all the time. He's just one of those horses. He'd get to the front and pull up and that sort of thing. Probably should have won that race. He was probably he was the best runner in Australia at the time. He had a little bit of trouble with his feet just then and there. Maybe that was a contributing factor. I'm not saying I was a contributing factor too, by the way. I probably was. But there's a lot of little things went amiss with him. Anyway, should have won the Derby there. I didn't get suspended from that race. I got suspended in the heats the week before when he won. He came out of the mobile and he got a bit tight on the horse inside him, and they allowed me to drive him in the New South Wales Derby final, and also Lady Laura in the Victorian Derby final. And then my suspension was going to sort of come into play after the Victorian Oaks final the following Saturday night, which I won that and ran second on him in the New South Wales Derby. That's what was the suspension over, not actually the final of the Derby. And anyway, about 10 days later, we took him to Western Australia, and John Nicholson, who I used to stay with in Melbourne at the time, drove him very well, and he won the Australian Derby in Western Australia. But that's probably one of the few times I had him really cherry. He had a bit of a freshen up from Sydney, and just things were going his way, and in the Australian Derby, he was just enormous. He was really sharp, and and probably looked pretty much free of injury and that sort of thing. So he went ran accordingly. It was just far too good for him.
Yeah. You touched on his injury he got in the 1990 championship. I think he had about 12 months off. But, gee, that Easter Cup win in 92, it was a race full of class. I think there was about three or four horses that contested the Inter-Dominion final a few weeks prior.
It was five of them, actually, and three of them were placed, or two of them were placed skaters. I think Franco Tiger was in it, he ran second, Anita Westbound Ground or something. But there was five Inter-Dominion Grand Finals in that race. Halio came back in and he didn't qualify for Inter-Dominion because he'd been out for too long, and his form leading up to it was okay, but it wasn't anything grand, so he sort of missed the cut for the final. Was sort of gradually working up to fitness. And then he came back, because he raced in Melbourne when we had also there for the Inter-Dominion that year anyway. He came back here and he was going pretty well. Had a couple of little splint injuries, which didn't really help him, but he was as good as I had him that year on that day. And, of course, he drew okay, came out of the gate good. And virtually that race, out of all the races he was in, that race, and there were, like I said, there was five Inter-Dominion Grand Finals in that race. And that virtually showcased his raw ability. Looked like he actually beat them, and he beat them quite well. So it sort of goes hand in hand with what I said earlier, Duncan, that had he had a nice season of racing against those five horses, he would have come out the other side a far, far better horse. And he went enormous. Actually, that's one of my favourite wins with him ever, because he actually proved his worth as a high-class horse, you know, in open grade against Grand Circuit horses, you know.
He did run fourth in an Inter-Dominion final in New South Wales in 1994, and if you got a little bit of luck, it might have been a different result.
Yeah, definitely would have done. He was probably about half a length off the horse that Brian Hancock drove around the corner. He drew ordinarily, and he never liked racing inside horses, and he drew seven on the back row, which didn't really suit him. He's always three or four back the fence, and he sort of worked into it right. But Hancock's horse was probably about half a length in front of him all the way around the corner, and by the time the two horses in front sort of stopped, Ultra Jet, and I can't think what was the other horse outside him. Hancock sort of got there half a length before I did, and I couldn't run into him because I had nowhere to go, so I had to take hold of him, and ultimately run fourth. Had he got a run, he probably would have nearly won it. Although then Hancock's horse was still going probably as good as me anyway, the eventual winner, so I don't know. But it was a very good effort. Then again, he was just so unlucky because he just drew an alley that really didn't suit a horse like him, because he tended not to like to race inside horse. He'd sort of hang up the track a little bit and was reluctant to sort of... He's a bit feel shy, if you could use that term, I suppose. He just didn't race well inside horses, you know. But anyway, very unlucky not to win that. And consequently, after that, he had a bout of colic, and we had to send him out to the universe, and they cut him open and had a look at him. And sort of fixed him up. He was okay. He lived. We thought he was going to die at the time, actually. And he sort of came through that okay, but the anaesthetic they gave him sort of didn't do the wonders for his liver, and he didn't quite ever get back to where he was from that time on, you know what I mean? But he still came out and won races after that, but he just probably wasn't quite as good as what he was prior to that, you know?
Yeah, he certainly was one of the greats here, and definitely worthy of his spot in the Tasmanian Harness Racing Hall of Fame. Before we touch on a few other horses, we might have a chat about Marley Jane. She only races a 2 and 3 year old. I think she won 10 from 17, and she was a handy horse, but tell you what, she proved to be a very good broodmare for horses that you train later on.
My word, yeah. Marley was a good horse. She, a little bit rough and ready too. She was quite a good gated horse. A little bit hot-headed and stuff like that, but her grandeur was the fact that she was a good broodmare. You know, she threw several horses that were very good, you know. I suppose she was fairly sweet-gated. Not that fashionably bred, I suppose you could say, but she just turned out to be a good broodmare, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of her offspring. Lourdes, she ended up winning 36 races across not only Australia, but the United States as well, where she recorded a time of 151.4. How does she rate with some of the fillies and mares you've prepared?
Probably the best overall. She was a good 2 and 3 year old. She came out in Launceston, and prior to us selling it or coal selling to the United States, I think she ran 157 at Mowbray against a very good quality of field of horses. She only ever ran first or second the whole time I had her. She never ever ran further back than that. She was a very, very, very good horse. Very good horse. Virtually had untapped ability. Had she just stayed around, I think she would have gone on and raced considerably interstate and done very, very well. But on raw ability, I'd say she's as good as good a filly as I've ever had, probably if not the best. Some of the younger fillies I had as, say, 2 and 3 years, you might have thought they may have been better than her, but I don't think they were. I think she was probably the best one I had overall, you know.
Yeah. Another horse that had a Marley Jane that had a very good record was Dare We Dream Me. He almost won the Australian Derby, almost won a Tasmanian Derby, beaten by Device. We all know the record he done. Did we get to see the best of him?
No, definitely not. He was another horse. I thought the sky was the limit for Dare We Dream. He was pretty rough and ready too. He was a nice horse, pretty wild. I thought he'd go on and make a Grand Circuit type horse at any problem in the world. He was just a really nice horse. He was strong, he was fast, had a bloody attitude that you wouldn't believe, but he was a really, really good horse. But he, after that Australian Derby run up there, I think he had a run in the... no, he didn't. I think he did his suspension in that race. He came back with a little bit of swelling after that run and at Mowbray, and then we thought, oh, we'll see how he goes, and we scanned him up, and he looked as if he's going to be okay, and then we ran him in the Globe Derby Stakes, and he actually sort of sprained his suspensory. We ran him in the final fortnight later, but he was struggling to get around, but we knew that if you do run him, he's probably going to break down, but he's probably going to win the race, which he did do. If you don't run him, he might never race again anyway, so we just had to just throw caution to the wind and see how we went. We gave him 12 months off, got him back in. He went to West Australia for a while and they smucked around him out there, but he never raced after that. But it was disappointing for us then, because we had huge respect for the horse and huge hopes for him, because when Device beat him down here in the Tasmanian Derby and also in Launceston, Device drew one both times. Not that I'm saying that he was a better horse than Device, but right at that time, he was the one horse that probably could have beaten him. Had we had a little bit of luck in the draw, we just didn't quite get the opportunity. He ran exceptional well in both runs. You couldn't expect anything more of him. But Device was an exceptional horse too, like as a three-year-old, and he just led up and won. So basically in front, he was nearly unbeatable, you know what I mean? Although we went down my shot up in the Tasmanian Derby, but anyway, that's the way it goes. That's racing, you know?
Yeah, certainly is. Colster is another horse out of Marley Jane. I think he won 2 sire stakes final, and again, I think injury brought the end of his career a little bit early.
Yeah, it did. So he was in the same boat. He wasn't as good as Dare We Dream, obviously, but he was a really, really nice horse also. Different type of horse. He was nice and sweet, gated and all that sort of thing, and he did all the right things. And he actually also did his suspensory too. We had a bit of trouble with those horses out of Marley Jane with their suspensories and that sort of thing, but he sort of finished his career too early because of suspensory problems too. He may not have achieved the heights of Dare We Dream, but he would have definitely been an open grade free-for-all here and won his share of open grade race from the mainland down the track. Like, I would don't say he would have been the Grand Circuit horse, whereas Dare We Dream definitely would have been. But he was a really, really nice horse, you know, a nice, neat, packaged horse, had good power, was a good 2 and 3 year old. Just a ripper of a horse, you know, like, unbelievable. Like, Marley had Lord Ayres, who was one of my favourite horses ever. Then she had Colster, Dare We Dream, and, you know, the three of the better horses I've ever had, really. Yeah.
A few of these horses were a bit before my time. I might just get a quick comment on them. Almeida Boy's a horse that started in your care before he ended up in Victoria.
Very good horse, yeah. Almeida Boy's a really good horse. He went to Vinnie Knights after he's finished his 2 year old racing here. Would have probably achieved greater heights, only he fell over in a training accident over there and hurt his hip, I think. And he sort of, then he had a bit of a habit of galloping early in his races when Vinnie had him, but he was a really, really good horse, very fast horse. He started off his racing career down here, like we broke him in and got him going, and we brought him off Les Bromfield, actually. That's how long ago that was. Mum and I bought his mother, and she had a mare called Nahani, and she had a foal on a boy, Inner Circle, which was Almeida Boy, and we didn't have the money actually to buy Almeida Boy at the time, so Robin Gardner bought him for $5,000, so that's how cheap he was back then, but $5,000 then was like $20,000 now, sort of thing. It was a fair bit of coin. Anyway, Robin bought him, had good success in here, and then sent him money. Obviously, he's a very good horse, and he was an open grade grand circuit type horse, and won his share of races. But I reckon that he would have been a lot better had he not had a training mishap over there. So, you know, a very, very good horse.
Whiskey Regal was a good young horse. I think he won a Tasmanian Derby.
Yeah, he won the Tasmanian Derby. Whiskey was a nice little horse, sweet-gated little thing. What could I say? But he won two or three races in Melbourne. He was a really nice horse, Whiskey. I wouldn't say he was anywhere near a Grand Circuit horse, but as a good 2 and 3 year old, he won his share of races. He was the best horse here, sort of going through his grades and stuff like that. Yeah, a real nice horse. Whiskey was a good horse to ride too. I used to ride him a lot. He was a nice little horse to ride, but a beautiful little horse actually. Yeah. Charlie Beeman had him. Didn't pay a lot of coin for him either, but he just turned out a magnificent little animal. I think he bought him from Eric Fleming back then.
Yeah, Jurassic Jack. He was another horse that done an outstanding job early, but by all reports, that his gait probably cost him many more feature wins.
Oh, definitely. He had. I don't know whether he had trouble with his front legs or his shoulder. He always had a real rough hitch type go around the corners and stuff like that. And like back then, we raced on the smaller tracks like Hobart and that sort of thing. We hadn't got over to Elwick back then. I don't think he ever raced at Mowbray, Jurassic Jack. Actually, I think it might have been before that time. But anyhow, he was a very good horse. He won the Cadbury Sweepstakes down here and stuff like that. Very, very good juvenile horse. And like you said, he was just a rough-gated horse, and we've had trouble with him up front somewhere, and we couldn't actually pinpoint where it was. Later on in his life, he went up to Queensland to Vic Frost when I got disqualified once. And Vic had the same problem when he was up there as we had him down here. He was just struggling to get around corners and stuff like that, and we could never put our finger on really what was wrong with him. And he sort of just drifted off into the wilderness after that, you know what I mean? But as an early horse, he was big and strong and powerful, and Barry won the Cadbury Sweepstakes, I mean, because I was away with Valor, I think, at the time, or Lady Law, one of them. I was on the mainland, and anyway, Barry drove him in the Cadbury's, but he was a real nice horse, but mainly a juvenile, 2 and 3 year old type horse, and especially 2 year old, you know?
Yeah. Well, they're just some of the best horses you've trained, and we could probably continue this chat for a bit longer, but let's just fast forward a little bit and have a chat about some of the quality trainers and drivers that we see today that have gone through your care. You must be proud with what a long list of them have been able to achieve.
Yeah, well, everyone came through. Like, I think with that sort of situation, everyone wants to do it. It's like every child in Australia or every boy in Australia wants to play AFL football. Yeah, it's okay to want to do it, but you've got to have the a little bit of natural flair and talent for it. So, you know, and the guys that have been up here and have gone on and done well, like Skip, Paul Ashwood and stuff like that, and even Pencil Ford and that sort of thing, has done very, very well. Pretty much everyone that's ever been up here sort of has done okay with their horse, even if I only had one or two horses. Ian Gidd, Tim Jackman, and those sort of guys who just had one or two horses, they all did very well with them, that sort of thing. I won't say that it was all to do with me, but it's like everything else. If you get good grounding and they pay attention a little bit, and then, of course, everyone's got their own opinion and own ideas of how to do things and all the rest of it, but just basic horsemanship and craft, that no matter how you train them, you've got to have that anyway. And I think that they all were interested, all wanted to do that, and so the way they went, you know, and they've all done quite well in their own sphere, you know.
Yeah, as I touched on at the start, we haven't seen you since mid-2009. As someone that sort of took a step back and look at the industry from afar, how do you see the industry today?
Totally hopeless for mine. When before you start shooting me down over those remarks, I can remember when I was younger and we'd go to the races and everyone was very interested in the two-year-olds and things like that, and the three-year-olds, because that was grand to see who had the best two-year-olds, and everyone had an opinion of the two-year-olds, and you'd always hear rumours about this one and that one and someone else's three-year-olds and stuff like that. Also, with the three-year-olds, you might have two or three three-year-olds that hadn't met each other and all going quite well, so we'd love to see them racing in the derbies and stuff like that and see which one was the best one. Then you'd leapfrog sort of the middle grade type horses and go to the free-for-all horses, and it was always grand to see, and let's face it, we've always had a nice enough mob of free-for-all type horses here, and it was always good to watch those sort of races. And And it used to get people to race. It used to keep you interested in things like that. And even going through the grades, it'd always be a nice 3-year-old going through and be interested in what show they're going and if they were up to the mark and if they were as good as what we all thought they were and that sort of thing. That was what stimulation for me and the drive for me was, to the 2 and 3-year-olds and of course, the open grade horses. And now I would say nearly all the horses going around are all sort of middle grade, sort of CO to about C4 or 5 type horse or C6. And really, that doesn't really excite me that much. It's like watching, use the equivalent, it'd be like watching in the spring carnival in Melbourne compared to a midwinter meeting at Wyong. It's just a lot of difference, you know what I mean? It's a bit hard to get wrapped in a bunch of horses going around at Wyong where everyone can sit there and watch the spring racing carnival in Melbourne with all the good yumpers going around. That's pretty much the same here from my point of view. Along those lines, you know what I mean? Yeah, so that's why I reckon it's going ordinarily. To be totally honest, I think the breeding industry probably hasn't helped that. Like, and I think, as I've mentioned once before, I think with that frozen semen, there was a time back when I was younger, mind you, this is a fair while ago, there was lots and lots of guys in Tasmania even that had their own size and things like that. I can remember Cedric Lane up the northwest and Bob Kernan with Tasman Lodge and Les Bromfield down here, and I don't know whether the Woods is out there sort of thing, all had a horse or whatever it's size, but everyone sort of had a locally bred horse that was would side a few winners and that sort of thing. It was quite interesting and quite different to watch. Then they brought in the frozen semen and even places like Neptune Stud and that, and Tasman Lodge sort of had to take a back seat because a lot of the horses, and Eric Fleming out there at New Norfolk, had to take a back seat because people were sending or getting frozen semen over from, say, the best horses from Alabar and or even New Zealand, that sort of thing. So it sort of stopped that local breeding industry. And I reckon it's easy to look back now and upon reflection, so to speak, it's easy to look back now and say, yep, we failed ourselves back then by letting that happen. In saying that, in the thoroughbred world, they don't let that happen because they don't let that frozen semen out. And where you might go to Redoubt's Choice, but you can only serve a certain amount of mares every year or whatnot, you know what I mean? Or Exceed and Excel, who's probably the best on Australia for the thoroughbreds at the minute, he can only serve a certain amount of mares. So there's still an outlet for lots of other second-tier stallions, if you can use that term. And let's face it, those second-tier stallions often do throw very, very nice horses. When you look back, even on the horse race out of Tasmania, even in our industry, over the years, like, they're not all the better horses aren't by the most fashionable bred horse. There you go with say, Hallier. He's by Kateri Knight, who was a grand circuit horse in his day, but he wasn't the best. You know what I mean? He certainly wasn't an American bred horse or anything like that, where they've got to be American bred to get the best horses. Quite obviously, the American influence in them has made the horses slick gaited, and it's also made the 2 and 3-year-olds a little bit better and easier to train. But at the end of the line, I don't know if it's made the grand circuit horses any better or not. I'd go as far as to say horses from the older days, like, say, Copper Arm and Pro Chevalier, mind you, I'm using the extreme here. Even back in before my time, horses like Hal Wes are probably the best horses in the world, and yet they were very unfashionably bred, you know what I mean? They weren't American influence so much, you know, like they are today. And I don't know whether that's destroyed our industry, so to speak. You know, it's just taken everything away from the sort of local economy of harness racing and sort of sent it to big studs like Alabar and that sort of thing, where they're going to reap their rewards from importing horses from the other side of the world, you know.
Yeah. Do you miss not being involved in the industry, and have you ever considered a racetrack return?
Very much so. I miss it. To be totally honest, I'd get back in it tomorrow if it reverted back to what it was when I was in it before. Because I do miss it. I do miss the competitiveness of it. I'm probably too old to drive competitively now. I wouldn't be too old to be competitive, but I'm older, put it that way. but it's definitely could train them, and I'd probably be better trained now than I ever was because, you know, you get older and wiser quite obviously. But it's nowhere near like it used to be. Like, we used to go to the race, and it was exciting to go there. Like I said, it was exciting to watch the 2 and 3-year-olds go around and the good ones and see who had the best ones. It was just exciting all the time. now it's lost its grandeur effect for mine. Mind you, I'm out of it. I'm not bagging the industry as such at the minute. I just don't think it's what I would perceive it to be. You know what I mean? And I would be something I wouldn't particularly want to get in. If it reverted back to the old, use the term, the older days, or when I was in it before, yeah, I'd definitely gonna get back in it tomorrow. I'd find a way back in and get some horse and away I'd go again, no doubt in the world. But it's just not like that anymore. And I'm not into mediocrity so much, if you know what I mean. I don't want to sound like a wanker saying that, but if everyone wants to get nice horses, no one wants to go around to make up numbers. And my view on that is a lot of those horses go around now, all they do is make up numbers. And I tell you another thing, what I think was probably ruining the industry here, claimers. Those horses which should have been moved on when they're on their mark, and we've done it a host of times with plenty of our even good horses when they reached a stage where, yep, they're in grades now, they can't go any further, they're on their mark, and that sort of thing. We'll just move them on even though they were nice horses, rather than revert back and run them in bloody claiming races. When those owners would have that nice horse, we'll go and buy another yearling for you to get going and start all over again. Well, you keep those horses going, and there's no way those owners will go and say, oh yeah, we'll go and buy a yearling. We've still got their old horse racing around. And some of them race around until they're 9 or 10 years old and have over 100 starts. Well, realistically, is that horse very lucrative for those owners? Or would you not be better to go and buy a young horse and hope like hell that the damn thing goes, okay, and you can start the ball rolling again? I don't know how the structure is of stake money or 2 and 3 odd racing is now. I don't think it's all that good, to be honest, but if it were reverted back to what it used to be, like there was good money in 2 and 3 odds, and if you had a horse that was okay, you could do well out of it, you know?
Yeah. We see many people this day and age, we see their family following their footsteps into the industry. Have your two kids ever considered coming into the industry?
No, not at all. My son Jeremy, he got drafted to Richmond earlier to play footy, and then he trains Clarence down here now. But he's interested in the horses, but he's never been interested in actually a career in harness racing. I suppose when he's growing up, you can see how hard it was, even though we had a lot of success and that sort of thing. There's still a lot of hard work in it. And probably the monetary gain for the amount of work you put in is probably not there, you know. If you had another job, if he's a plumber or a bricklayer or what have you, putting in the same effort we used to put into the horses, and Barry probably bat for me on this term, if we put in that effort doing something else, we'd probably be millionaires by now, you know, multi-millionaires. But, you know, I suppose racing horses is like farming or milking cows. It's just a way of life, if you know what I mean. It's not actually a job. You don't see it as a job. It's more like a way of life. And unfortunately, that way of life is not lucrative at the end of the day. You think, well, maybe I should have been doing something else, you know what I mean? And I don't know how those guys in the racing industry go now. Obviously, right at the minute, with the virus going around, they'd be struggling a bit. But, yeah, it's a very tough road to hoe, you know what I mean? And I take my hat off to anyone who wants to get in and do it, you know, because I've been there doing it. I know how hard it is. But in saying that, I'd love to be back in it. If it were back to like it was years ago, I'd be back in it tomorrow. But it's not like that at the minute. And to be honest, in the foreseeable future, I can't see it reverting back to like it used to be. It's sort of gone from mine. It's gone from a nice industry to a cottage industry, you know, if that's a good way to put it, or whatever. But it was grand back in the late 80s and 90s and early 2000s. It was a grand industry. Even in the write-ups in the paper, there would always be something written about the harness horses. And let's face it, our championship was worth $100,000. I think even back then, the Hobart Cup was only worth $50,000 or $80,000. And now the Hobart Cup's worth $250,000. What's our championship worth now? $50,000? You know, and that was, what, 20 years ago. I'm talking about. So things have reverted back the wrong way, and things haven't gone the way we in the industry, past tense for me obviously, would hope it would have gone, you know. So you'd wonder where the future is and what it is. And like I said, for mine, it's more like a cottage industry now rather than a grand industry, you know.
Yeah.
And don't take me to be negative. I'm just being very open and blunt, you know.
Yeah, and it's good to get your thoughts for someone that's been one of our greats. As we get towards the end, who was the best trainer in Tasmania you competed against?
Oh, Barry Recker, easily. Barry was always a good trainer. Oh, and his father, Wayne, was an excellent trainer also. Mind you, in saying that, Barry and I had a host of horses, so therefore we should have won the premiership as we did, because we had a lot of horses in work. there's been plenty of trainers around in Tassie would have been very, very good. Barry would have been the best trainer I've come up against, obviously, because I sparred with him pretty much every week, and he's very, very good. And his dad, Wayne, was also pretty touched before us a little bit, but he was an outstanding trainer too. There's lots of guys like Bob Kerner, who was an outstanding trainer. I think it didn't have a lot of horses. See, you've got to remember, when Barry and I were in the racing, we sort of had, 20, 30 horses in work all the time, whereas guys like, say, Bob Kerner, use him as an example, didn't have that many horses, and they were very successful at what they were doing too. So there's been lots and lots of very good trainers around. Quite often, people get recognised, and no doubt I would have done, no doubt Barry has done the same way, no doubt Bob Kernan's done, and a host of other trainers. You get Peter Moody on the mainland, he gets recognised for the fact that he trained Black Caviar. It's probably been a greater feat, and I say that is my situation for sure. Some of the better training feats haven't been with horses that are outstanding. They've been with horses that are ordinary, and you've had to get them up and going and win races, win three or four races with a horse who could probably only win a race. No one ever recognises that because that horse is insignificant. Where you go and see a horse like, oh, yeah, he's won, what, 30-year-old race or something, you know, and you take your hat off because he's a great horse and he did a good job training him. But there's been better training feats with horses that haven't won that in a number of races and just than what there was with that. But you don't get recognised for those other couple of horses would have only won one, two races where you've done a good job with, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So therefore, in saying that, like, and I'll just use, I'll say Bob Kerner as an example. He did a great job with a lot of horses. Cedric Bloom was a good trainer in his day. But there's a host of blokes like that around that were very good trainers, you know, like, and would never get a lot of recognition because they didn't have huge numbers of horses or wasn't in everyone's face all the time. And so like Barry and I were with big numbers of horses and teams of the races every week, you know.
Yeah. Who would have been the best driver on Tasmanian soil you raced against?
What, next to me? I'm only joking. Obviously, Barry. Probably before our time, probably Graham Peck. He was an outstanding driver. I think we've probably been fairly lucky in Tasmania. I don't know about now because I don't go to the races, obviously. But back when Barry and I were driving, we sort of, there's a host of drivers that were very good. And all very, very capable. In my time, obviously, Barry was the hardest one to beat, no doubt in the world about that. And probably a little bit before my time, probably Graham Peck was the best driver. He was an outstanding driver, you know. And he was probably before his time too, so, you know. But then again, I don't think I ever drove against Graham Peck, so I can't really elaborate all that on my notes on money sort of saying that because I was a little boy watching over the fence and I had admired his style, you know.
Yeah. What's your favourite memory? When you look back at your career, what's the one memory that sticks out for you?
The one memory? Yeah. Oh, God. Well, actually, not any one single memory because lots of memories with lots of different horses and lots of oaks and championships and stuff like that, all grand. I think my favourite memory, really, out of all of it, was just the participation, like going to the races with a host of horses and having the big days, you know, like, and that's not just one day, that's just on a host of days, like to actually go to the races with a truckload of horses and come home with three or four winners and even a few times we went around to Devonport, won three or four or five races of a night, even though you'd think they were less on Hobart Warren system, but it still gave you a good feeling, if you know what I mean, like, Being successful is probably, whether it's a championship or whether it's just a normal old CO somewhere, being successful is a great thrill. So I would say not just any one thing, but a host of things and just being very competitive and doing well is probably my favourite memories, and especially when times are good and you're winning lots of races often, you know?
Look, Neville, it's been great reminiscing about your career, and let's be realistic, we've only just had a look at the top of your resume because we could continue on for probably another hour or so, but I've really appreciated this chat. It's great to catch up, and thanks for reminiscing with us today.
Well, thank you for giving me a call, Duncan, and any time you want to be enlightened by my wisdom, feel free to ring. I'm only joking there, but anyway, ring up any time. But yeah, no, it's been good. Yep, excellent.